Welcome to the Donna Sebo Show. Donna is an international mental practitioner, award-winning author, counselor, speaker, teacher, and radio TV personality. Dedicated to empowering others through her mental skills, she also features authors and experts from all over the world to share their knowledge and experience with you, the listening audience. Now, let's join Donna and her guests. Here's Donna.
Hello, and welcome to an hour of mind power. This is Donna Sebo, and today we're traveling, well, overseas. We're traveling to England to talk with a man who has dedicated his life to the study of history, to spiritual exploration, but he's a man that has a zest for living, and he believes that the impossible is possible. My guest today is Martin Palmer. We're talking with him in England, and the book we're discussing, this is a recent publication, is The Quan Yin Chronicles, The Myths and Prophecies of the Chinese Goddess of Compassion. Martin Palmer, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much indeed, Donna. It's a great pleasure.
Martin, you are the director of the International Consultancy of Religion, Education, and Culture. You are a known expert on interfaith work. You do it around the world. And you've written a number of books, and you have been fascinated with Chinese history, studying both their texts and doing research that a lot of people maybe wouldn't want to spend the time with. Now, you also joined forces with Jay Ramsey, and he's a post and therapist, and he lives in England, as you do. And You are a man, from what I understand from Sarah, who works at Hampton Roads, who has published it. She said, Donna, you need to talk with this man and find out more about this wonderful conference that's coming up in the fall. Also, that he is a religious advisor to Prince Philip. Do you mind giving us some background on this, Martin? How in the world did you find your path taking you to such interesting arenas of interaction with people around the world and also getting into depth with the studying of a culture that is thousands and thousands of years old?
Well, it's a good story, I have to say, even if I say so myself. About 25 years ago, I was running the first ever multi-faith education center in the center of Manchester in England, one of our biggest and most religiously and culturally diverse cities in the country. And while I was running this center, we were doing a lot of work on the way in which different religions and different cultures understand literally the physical environment in which we live. So, for example, in Chinese religion, there is the whole tradition that I'm sure many of your listeners are familiar with of feng shui or feng shui.
Yes.
The way in which you build and the way in which you relate to the landscape is deeply rooted in the Chinese and particularly the Taoist philosophical and very practical approach to life. But the same is true in Christian, there's Christian geomancy as well. Every old church faces east. Why? Because we celebrate the rising sun, S-O-N, but also S-U-N.
Mm-hmm.
Most churches actually make the shape of a cross on the land. The south side is where you bury people. The north side is the devil's side. So we have, within Christian theology and Christian architecture, a very similar feng shui to the Chinese. Australian Aboriginals have their way of interpreting land, etc. And I wrote a book for the schools in England. In England, of course, we have religious education as a compulsory subject in all our schools. And this book was read by, was written for the World Wildlife Fund, WWF. And Prince Philip, who was then the international president, read the book and was at a big meeting where they were about to celebrate their 25th anniversary of WWF, and the plans were for a big conference in Jakarta about economics and politics and environment, and he looked at the program and said, my God, this is boring. Well, I'm not going. There was a rather sort of hushed Thai around the table, and he said, I just read this book all about how the different religions view the world, and how the stories, the mythologies, the legends within which you live, the cosmologies, in a sense, Donna, within which you live, shape how you treat the physical world.
Yes.
And he said, why don't we just work with the major religions? They're the largest, most powerful forces in the world. They've outlived every ideology, every dynasty, every empire. Why on earth aren't we working with them? So I found myself organizing a huge event in Assisi in Italy, the birthplace of St. Francis, in 1986. And that launched a whole program of working with the major religions around the world on their spiritual teachings, on their land holdings. The major religions we work with own 8% of the habitable surface of the planet. A further 15% of the surface of the planet is considered sacred within one tradition or another. They own more newspapers and magazines and television and radio stations than the whole of the expanded European Union. They are the third largest investors in the world. And they have either founded, still run, or contribute towards 54% of all schools. So why on earth wouldn't you work with them? And yet, the conventional environmental and conservation movement has never engaged seriously with religion. And then 2 years ago, I was asked by the UN Secretary General, would I organize the major religions of the world to lobby for the big Copenhagen meeting in December this year, which will establish the new climate change protocol, the successor to Kyoto. And he wrote me a personal letter saying, would I do this? And I wrote back a very personal letter saying, absolutely not. Because first and foremost, the religions are not campaigning organizations. They are the oldest sustaining organizations in the world. Secondly, religions know that if you're going to actually change an individual, it takes years. And if you're going to change the world, it takes generations.
Mm-hmm.
And thirdly, we would not deal with climate change as the issue. Climate change is a symptom of the fact that we have fallen out of relationship with God, often with ourselves, often with our neighbors, and most seriously with the rest of nature. And so if he was prepared to work with us on a program that would develop long-term plans with the faith for generational changes, that would be based on their profound teachings, not on a panic response to a socially created crisis, then we'd be happy to work with him. And he wrote back and said, yes, absolutely. That was exactly what he hoped we would do. And now the United Nations is now calling the movement we've launched with every major religion around the world the largest civil society movement in history. And Prince Philip will, with the Secretary General of the UN, celebrate the schemes which will involve about 1.5 billion people worldwide, 500,000 religious communities, at Windsor Castle in England in early November. So, in brief, that's what it's about.
Well, I think that is utterly phenomenal. I think the wisdom that has been expressed through the words that you've just shared with us is profound.
Thank you very much indeed, Donna.
I think that we have to look at something to make changes. There's no instant pill, add water, mix, and you've got it. You are dealing with thought patternings, as you say, that have evolved to a state of discord. What do we do to bring them together collectively so that we see the same objective and we work towards that objective?
And I think the other approach that we use is that whilst we may all agree that there is a crisis, the way in which different religions, the Taoists of China, who I know especially well, or Judaism, or the evangelical environmental movement in the States, which is one of the fastest growing in the world, or the Hindus, or the Muslims, or whatever, we each come at this with our own distinct perspective. And what we celebrate, Donna, and I think this is something from what I understand from your approach, what we celebrate is not what we hold in common, but our unique contribution.
Yes.
Because it's what makes each of us special, and it's what motivates each of us that actually leads us to make those kind of changes, those kind of commitments, that will actually carry us through the tough times, the good times, and the indifferent times. And so what we build on is literally hundreds of different approaches drawn from the different faiths and their different traditions, which together make a collective difference, but only work because a follower of Lord Jagannath in the state of Orissa in India will make environmental programs based on his or her belief in Lord Jagannath.
Mm-hmm.
A Maronite Christian on the slopes of Mount Lebanon in Lebanon will make a choice based on their teachings. A Catholic or a Huichola in Mexico based on their own particular teachings, and so on. What we have found is that if you basically say we're all the same, people aren't interested. It's when we can celebrate the fact that each of us and each of our traditions has a unique contribution. We're not the only way, but what we have is unique. Then people feel special. They feel that what they can bring to such a crisis or such a situation can make a difference. And so although we work with the different religions, we work with them as distinct units. We're not terribly interested in what unites them. We're interested in what is distinctive.
I think that that approach is one of the healthiest approaches that we could ever do. I think one of the biggest failings, and this has been throughout history, is when someone will come into, I'll use the word, a turf of a group of people and not take the time to understand why they have evolved. And this takes time. This isn't something that's instantaneous. Too frequently in the history of mankind, it's if we don't like it, we wipe it out and just ignore it. And it's ridiculous because every culture has something to give. We all have weaknesses. We have strength. But it is that unique individual expression that in its proper context can bring so much. And I just think this is so exciting that this is going to be taking place at Windsor Palace. This is going to be just a phenomenal, phenomenal event.
It's going to be exciting, and it's quite possible, Donna, that we may actually be holding a slightly smaller event, but nevertheless celebrating these huge commitments by the faith. What we've asked is each major faith to commit for 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, depending on what is an auspicious number in their tradition, a seven-year plan to introduce generational changes. And it is just possible that we may actually be celebrating this at the UN in mid-September. And I would love, if we do that, to perhaps have a special time with you again.
Oh, I think that would be fabulous. Absolutely
well,
fabulous.
If I may, we'll come back to you through the absolutely splendid Sarah, who has organized this interview in the first place. And if it takes place, Donna, let's talk about that in the future.
Oh, I definitely would be very open to that.
Fantastic.
Let's talk about the Chinese culture. And by the way, I want to say at the bottom of the hour, we're going to be taking a break. Would you be able to stay on a little bit longer with me?
I certainly will.
Oh, that's delightful. And our guest today is Martin Palmer. We're talking with him. He's in England. And we are going to be discussing the Kuan Yin Chronicles. But it was so important to me that for you who are listening to this broadcast, understand for all of the disheartening information we are pummeled with day in and day out by media, it is so important for you to know there are people, though they're not getting a lot of ballyhoo, they are methodically, thoughtfully coming together saying, we can make a difference, let's go out instead of just flapping our lips. We are going to go, and we're going to come together, and we're going to make a difference. And that's what counts. So, ladies and gentlemen, it's very important to know that this is going to be evolving, and if Martin has a website, we'll be giving you that information later on.
We're ready.
He's going to be staying with us. Martin, Kuan Yin, I have to tell you, I think I'd heard the name, but before I got your book, I have to admit total ignorance about this Chinese goddess. Her history is amazing. What made you decide that you wanted to write a book specifically oriented to her?
That's a very good question. I suppose, first and foremost, I have been involved with Chinese culture since I was 18. When I was 18 years old, my parents and I mutually agreed that about 8,000 miles between us would be a very, very good idea. So, experience I'm sure many of us have had, and as a parent now, I can certainly recognize that too. And they paid a one-way ticket for me to go to Hong Kong to work in a Christian orphanage, children's home, in Hong Kong, where I worked for a year, and it transformed me. And I came back, I think, a far nicer son than I went out. Mind you, my parents seem to have improved in the year as well.
Oh, I love that. I just love it.
And I became fascinated by Chinese culture. I learned to read classical Chinese. But I was particularly fascinated. Grown up in a vicarage, in a clergy household, and if you grow up in a clergy household, Donna, you have to be an atheist for a while.
Mm-hmm.
It's almost obligatory. And when I went to Hong Kong, I was kind of just beginning to come back to an appreciation of my own faith, my Christianity. And I found the Chinese world totally fascinating. Not challenging at all. I found it actually lay very comfortably alongside my own Christian faith. And I've always had a fascination in the figure of the Virgin Mary, or the Mother of God, as she's known in Orthodoxy.
Mm-hmm.
And then I discovered Kuan Yin, and the links were so clear. The if you like, the pursuit or the quest for the divine feminine that I found deeply fascinating in my own faith, I found also in the Chinese religion as well. And it was some time before I discovered that Kuan Yin is both sexually ambiguous and what I can only really adequately describe as religiously promiscuous.
Now that's a tantalizing statement.
Well, when Kuan Yin arrives, and Kuan Yin, by the way, means the one who hears the cries of the world, who hears the pain of the world, and responds in compassion to those cries. The full name is Quan Shi Yin, but ever since the 8th century AD in China, you've not been allowed to say Shi, because Shi was the name of the first emperor of the Tang Dynasty, and it was therefore a forbidden name. But her full name is Quan Shi Yin, but we always call her Kuan Yin. And it means to hear the cries of the world. It's in other words, the compassionate one who reaches down to a suffering universe and seeks to enable every sentient being, not just human beings, but animals and birds and insects, as well as the lesser gods, to enable them to have a better reincarnation. Now, when Kuan Yin arrives in China in the 5th or 6th century AD, quite early on in the arrival of Buddhism in China, she is a he. And her original name is Avalokiteshvara. It's the same deity that lies behind the Dalai Lama, for example. He is believed to be a reincarnation of Avalokiteshvara, which also means the one who hears the cries of the world. Kuan Yin is simply the Chinese translation. So Avalokiteshvara, Kuan Yin, arrives in China, 4th, 5th century, as a man, very much a man. Lots of stories about his masculinity and all the rest of it. By the time you get to the 9th century, 10th century AD, Kuan Yin has changed sex. The only sexual transformation that we know of in any world religion. And he has become a she, and becomes the only female deity in the Chinese Buddhist pantheon. Then what happens is that by the time you get to the 12th century AD, Kuan Yin is not only a Chinese Buddhist deity, a bodhisattva to use the correct term, but has also been officially appointed by the emperor of the time in 1119 as a Taoist deity, the mainstream religion of China, the indigenous religion of China. By the time you get to the 17th century, Kuan Yin is recognized as being a manifestation of the Virgin Mary by the emerging Catholic Church in China, and so on and so forth. So you have this god who arrives as a male, becomes a goddess, who arrives as a Buddhist deity, is recognized as a Taoist deity as well, is honored in Christianity, is even revered within Islam in China. And when the Cultural Revolution collapsed in China and the Communist Party emerged from the horrific Cultural Revolution, the very first statue that they erected was to Kuan Yin. So she is a goddess who transcends gender and who transcends religious identity to be this all-encompassing, embracing, compassionate figure. She is without parallel anywhere in the world. And when my colleagues and I sat down to write this book, there had been one book written about her in the West in the 1960s, and that was it. And we thought, it's time that the West knew about this goddess, God, who is able, in a sense, to say, do you know the truth, and particularly the divine feminine truth, transcends cultures, transcends traditions, even transcends gender and language. And I think there's a profound truth in that, Donna.
I really would agree with that, and I was so intrigued because of the little bit of history that I'm aware of regarding the Chinese culture, which I have a tremendous respect for, the ingenuity of their people historically and the phenomenal things that they had when Western Europe was in the Dark Ages. We were living in mud puddles, and they were wearing silks and satins and, you know, doing all kinds of good stuff. It's a fascinating, fascinating culture, and I think China is representative of every nation and or people's. It shows cycles, up, down, up, down, plateaus. Their history is just amazing. And, of course, in the world today, they have risen into a very prominent positioning. And after being through such devastating times, I knew personally some people that had survived the Cultural Revolution, and the stories that they shared with me really were just agonizing. It was equal to anything that we heard about with the Holocaust and the things
absolutely.
That went on.
Couldn't agree more.
I mean, and with Pol Pot, I mean, it's just, it's horrific what, and this is my opinion, what humans do to humans, regardless of their cultural background. But I was intrigued with the fact that Kuan Yin was used, there is what is described as a divination process, divining, being able to get advice. Now, the Chinese, in doing this, have a very different attitude. It's as if they're asking for insight and wisdom, but they don't want to be told what to do. Explain how this evolved and why you think it evolved with her as the goddess.
Actually, you put that extremely well, Donna, I have to say, because most people assume that Chinese divination, or indeed any form of divination, is about kind of asking for an answer and getting a set answer. This is not the Chinese approach. The Chinese actually say there are only two things that are fixed in life: when you are born and what kind of family you're born into, i.e. a poor family, a wealthy family, a sick family, a family on the edge of society, or a family in the center of society. Everything else is up to you. Now, if you don't take control of your future and of your life, then there are certain patterns which, depending on when you're born, under what sign within the Chinese astrology, will kind of roll out, but none of it is inevitable. None of it is inevitable. You are always in control of your future if you decide to take a hold of it. And therefore, what has emerged from the I Ching, which I'm sure many of your listeners are familiar with, through to the Kuan Yin prophecies, is the notion that, you know how it is, Donna, you're facing a dilemma. You can see both sides of the case.
Mm-hmm.
You've got to make a tough, tough decision. And frankly, you know, you've looked at it from this angle, you've looked at it from that angle. Can you decide what to do? You know you've got to make a decision, but can you? Chinese divination then offers you what can only be described as an opportunity to put yourself out of the world in which you think you can control things into the greater world of the Tao, the Way, which is the Chinese description of, if you like, the primordial force that moves the universe. So you abandon all attempts to rationalize, all attempts to put things on one side and balance them on the other. And you just take a chance. You allow yourself to be open to what the universe is going to give you as advice. Not an answer. Does not give you an answer. But it will give you advice. And it's like a third voice. And very often that third voice will appear at first reading when you consult an oracle or a prophecy or a divination. It will seem absolutely coming out from left field. But the whole point is that it's shifting your head from this kind of attempt to rationalize everything and arrive at a rational answer. It's saying, yeah, fine. But think of it this way. And it is remarkable. The moment you allow the universe to actually say to you, what about this factor? Everything on the whole, not always, and it does depend upon the frame of mind of the individual, but almost always it then puts the question into a different light and you can then discover what the answer is. And Kuan Yin is remarkable. Her divination poems, which we've translated in the book and we've provided a very, very simple process for chance divination, but frankly, most Chinese, when they're consulting these oracle books, would just open it at random and put their finger down and see what it says. The Kuan Yin oracles and divination poems were written down in the 14th, 15th century, and they were done by great poets in many cases who would visit her great shrine in Hangzhou, which is a beautiful city where one of her major temples was. And after visiting the shrine, and very often after having an experience, a revelation of the goddess to them, would then sit in a beautiful spot overlooking a lake and would write a poem inspired by what they had understood. These poems were then collected, and there are 100 of them, and these have become, over the last 500 or 600 years, the divination poems of Kuan Yin. And what they offer, I think, which is distinct, the I Ching is about military success. It's about how, it's a handbook to governing a country and indeed how to conquer a country.
That was interesting. Well, I had no clue about that.
Oh, absolutely. I've actually done a translation of that by the same team, going back to the earliest texts. And maybe sometime we could have a program about that. I'd love to tell you about the origin of the I Ching. What Kuan Yin and divinations are, is you're opening yourself to the divine feminine. You're opening yourself to compassion. A very, very different set of perspectives from the I Ching.
Mm-hmm.
And it is interesting that it is, to a very great extent, it is men who are drawn to the I Ching, and it's women who are drawn to the Kuan Yin.
That makes sense. It really does. Because the feminine, in as much she is the one that births, goes through so much pain and agony during giving birth, that compassion is something that is very important. And what comes into my mind are images of peasants and women that would be left alone and having that compassionate personage that they felt could understand them would be very,
exactly.
very important.
Exactly. One of the reasons she's so popular is that she is seen as the goddess of childbirth and of giving of children, but also she is the friend of both men and women, and a lot of my Chinese men friends have had visions and experiences of her.
Mm-hmm.
All my Chinese women friends find her to be the friend who walks with them. And there's a lovely story, actually, Donna, which we tell in the book, which sort of captures this. Because
all right, Martin, we need to take a break. When we come back, we'll tell the story.
I'd love to.
All right. This is Donna Thiebaud. My guest from England is Martin Palmer. We're talking about Quan Yin and her chronicles. This is a Chinese goddess that is known and respected around the world. And her story? Well, we're going to be hearing another one in just a moment.
Enter the magical world of God's Kiss.
He sees a large open area of valley ground covered with a thick green grass. In the open space are many other children and animals. All kinds of animals. And all of the animals are talking. He can understand every word they are saying.
God's Kiss is a beautifully illustrated children's book about a young boy's journey into a valley with children and animals from all over the world. They are gathering together to experience the wonder of love and beauty that will affect their lives forever. A talking book audio narrated by the author Donna Thiebaud accompanies this wonderful storybook, creating a special magic all of its own. This book package makes a wonderful gift for those special children in your life, ages 3 to 10. God's Kiss book and talking book audio are only $19.95 plus shipping and handling. And the author Donna Thiebaud will autograph and personalize your book if you request it. Call 800-872-8852. You can also order through Donna Sebo's website, www.delphiinternational.com.
As a counselor, Donna Thiebaud is available for private consultations by appointment. These can be done by telephone or in person. If you'd like to schedule an appointment with Donna, call 253-582-5604 or 800-872-8852. That's 253-582-5604 or outside of Pierce County, 800-872-8852.
Do you want to lose weight? Do you deal with diabetes, high blood pressure, osteoporosis, or chronic pain? Do you want to know one of Dr. Perricone's 7 secrets to beauty, health, and longevity? Do you have 15 minutes a day to look and feel better? Then let me introduce you to DTaP, the workout that works. For the beginner or expert exerciser, learn from physical training specialist Teresa Tapp how, in just 15 minutes a day, you can burn fat and sugar, build strong bones and muscles, and lose inches fast, with no equipment or jumping. Visit the TTAP website, ttap.com, or call 1-800-342-0717 to learn how. That's t-tapp.com. We'll help you lose inches, look good, and feel fabulous at TTAP. 1-800-342-0717, ttap.com.
Hello, this is Donna Thiebaud, and we have as our guest today, I'm sure you've been listening to Martin Palmer, we're talking about Quan Yin. Now, this is a goddess that is known throughout the world, through various cultures, but especially for the Asian people, she has a tremendous, tremendous impact because she's known as the goddess of compassion. Now, before we went on break, Martin was going to tell us a story, and I had to interrupt him because I didn't want to interrupt the story itself. Martin, tell the story that you had in mind before we went on break that you wanted to share with my audience today.
I will, if I may, Donna. It's a story which I think embodies the compassionate dimension of Quan Yin and why she is so loved, as you rightly said, not just in China, but across Asia, Japan, Korea, and so forth. Now, the story is that after the creation of the world, all the animals lived together in wonderful harmony. And Quan Yin, the goddess of compassion, dwelt with them to teach them wisdom, to teach them compassion and generosity. And then after a while, she departed from this world and said her farewells and returned to heaven. Within about a week, discord broke out. Animals started eating other animals or hunting them or hurting them or causing them trouble. Animals had to flee into the deepest jungle to escape. The whole harmony of creation broke down. And in their distress, the animals prayed to the Buddha and said, please, please send Kuan Yin back again. Without her, we just fall apart. So Kuan Yin descended to earth again and reestablished harmony and sorted out the problems. And for a while, again, it was wonderful. The animals lived in peace and harmony. Kuan Yin walked amongst them. They knew that she was watching over them. And then again, she said, look, I'm needed in heaven. There are other tasks, other worlds for which I have to be compassionate. And so she ascended to heaven again. And again, you've guessed it, Donna, within a matter of weeks, discord broke out again. Strife, bloodshed, terror, fear entered the world of creation. And again, the animals prayed to the Buddha and said, please send us Kuan Yin. And once again she descended, and she said, now look, I can't be here the whole time. I have the entire universe for which I have to share compassion and struggle to help sentient beings overcome fear and terror. And the animal said, but if you go away again, it'll all fall apart. And she said, okay, I will leave with you a sign of my presence. And she chose the most boring, dowdy, dull-looking bird. And she picked this bird up, and she breathed on it, and it turned into the most fabulous bird you've ever seen. And it was the peacock. And in each of its feathers, she placed the symbol of an eye. And she said, these are my eyes. Through the peacock, I will watch the world, and I will bring compassion to all those who turn to me. And then she departed. And the peacock is the symbol of the compassion of Kuan Yin for all creation. She will not come down and strike the evildoers down, but she will leave with us a most beautiful bird, which symbolizes the eyes of the goddess looking with compassion on the world. But we have to respond by recognizing that she is watching us and that we need to become not the eyes of compassion, that's the peacock, but the hands, the feet, and the mouth of compassion. And I think, Donna, that's, for me, a wonderful example of the divine feminine. It's not a great creative power. It's not about striking enemies. It's not about telling people what to do. It's about walking beside them.
Mm-hmm. I think that that is an absolutely fabulous story. And it's a story that shows how significant it is in our world today that the role of the female has gradually been becoming more and more of that personage that doesn't walk behind the male, but walks beside the male. And this hasn't been going on for very long, and there's many places in the world that are terrified by this because they feel like they are going to be losing faith if the female comes forth. And it's such a sad thing, but Kuan Yin represents the fact, just through the story that you've told, that we don't have to have this fear. It is not necessary. There can be the harmony. There can be the communication. If there is disruption, we can work with it. We can work through it. And that's what I found so meaningful in your book. I think that your information, your history that you bring out about shamanism, which has been around for centuries, and then about Confucianism and how that was very, very male-oriented. And the positioning of the female in the Asian culture was really a very, very hard one. Very, very hard one. So now that is evolving away in our world today. The female and the male, they're both going to college, they have education, they're expecting an equality. It's just, it's an amazing patterning to watch, to see how this is evolving. I think your book coming out as it has is very, very timely. You go into, again, all of the different factors of change throughout China. Here we are in a world today. It wasn't that long ago that the Cultural Revolution was in place. You have political positionings that want to hang on to the old, which is nothing new. That's usually the way it goes, and trying to do things the old way. Mm. Being the scholar that you are, looking at what you have seen in changes, dealing with people from all over the world, what is your positioning regarding the shifts that we know we need to do so that we can, and that's the purpose of your conference coming up, both at the UN as well as in England. What do you think as people, that the average individual that is listening to this show, and by the way, I don't know what an average individual is, but it just sounds good when you say it. But the people that are listening to this show, they really are sincerely concerned. They want to be able to make a difference. You put this book out because you wanted to get a message across. What do you see relative to the cultural changes that you're observing in China and in other parts of the world?
I think at one level it's very simple, and it's encapsulated in the stories we tell of people's experience or stories of how Kuan Yin helps people. Because one of the fascinating things, Donna, about Kuan Yin is that she is not capable of miracles, not in the conventional meaning of the word, i.e., you know, you're absolutely in a terrible situation and you pray for somebody to get you out of it and wham bang, suddenly an angel appears and plucks you out of danger or what have you.
Mm-hmm.
Every single story about Kuan Yin's miraculous intervention requires from the person who is being helped that they have made the first steps, that they make the second step, and they make the final step. In other words, what Kuan Yin does is she says, I will draw out of you what it is you never knew you were capable of. But I will only draw it out of you if you will take the risk of discovering that you are capable of infinitely more than you ever feared or thought you were. And I think that is the heart of the message. The program that we've developed with the UN and the major religions is essentially saying to the faiths, you're not irrelevant, which is what many of the faiths have been told by imperialism, by science, by the Enlightenment, by Western powers and bodies. You're not irrelevant. You are enormously powerful, but you don't remember what your power is. Rediscover what it is that your faith gives you as a vision of the world, as a reason for hope, and turn this moment of crisis into an opportunity for glory. And then, whoever you understand the divine to be, God or Jehovah, Allah, Kuan Yin, Buddha, it's irrelevant. Whoever you understand the divine to be, they will partner with you. They will walk with you. But if you do not make the first steps, you cannot expect the divine to do it all for you. There's a wonderful story about the Methodist minister who said, Lord, Lord, I would love to win the lottery. And the Lord said, I will help you win the lottery, but first of all, you have to buy a ticket.
Right.
And it's that, I think, Donna. This world will only change not because we hope of some divine force that will rescue us from it, but because we decide we are going to change it. And then the divine is able to work with us. And that's the story of Kuan Yin. Every single story we have uncovered of her, to use the phrase miraculous intervention, requires the individual or the community to have made the first steps. And then Kuan Yin will meet you because you're on the way, because you've already made the commitment. And she will help you go beyond where you thought you could go. Give a very simple example from this program we're doing with the UN and the religions on the environment. We began working many years ago with the major Muslim organizations around the world, and for years we got nowhere because they themselves, the Muslim world, really didn't feel there was an ecological crisis. And then about 3 years ago, for various reasons, they awoke to the fact that there was a huge crisis of our relationship with nature. And they, as soon as they acknowledged that, we were able to start working with them. And now we will be able to announce, and you are the first media outlet on which we are telling this, in November at Windsor Castle, we will be announcing that within 8 years, the Hajj, the great Muslim annual pilgrimage, 4 or 5 million people, will be a green pilgrimage, all plastic banned. It will be virtually carbon neutral. To put that in perspective, Donna, last year 100 million plastic bottles were left after the 4-day Hajj.
Oh my goodness.
Now, the ability for the Muslims to move and to make their most sacred event of the year the focus of their environmental efforts required them to recognize there was a problem and then to pray about it.
Mm-hmm.
It's rather like Alcoholics Anonymous. You can't stop someone being an alcoholic by telling them off. They have to make the first step. Then they will be met by the divine who will walk with them. But if they don't make that first step, Donna, if we don't as individuals make that first step in changing our lifestyles, in thinking and in praying about it, nothing will happen. If we just wait for God or the gods or the Buddha or whoever you believe in to save us, it will never happen.
I agree.
We have to be the instruments of change in order that the divine can walk amongst us.
Martin, we are out of time. I need to know if there is a website that people can go to find out about the wonderful work that you and your associates are doing.
There certainly is. It's www.arcworld, and that's ARCWORLD.org, arcworld.org. And you'll find all about the 7-year plans and about the work with the Taoists in China, Buddhists in Mongolia, all around the world. And we would love to hear from your listeners.
Well, Martin Palmer, it has been a delight. Thank you for staying up. I know it's almost midnight in England. It has been an absolute joy and pleasure having you as a guest. For those of you listening, to learn more about Kuan Yin's chronicles, the myths and prophecies of the Chinese goddess of compassion, whatever your spiritual background is, you will resonate with this book. It is not a huge book, but it's one that will create tremendous thought within you and can give you a lot of inspiration. It's got history in it, it has stories, and it has practical application. Again, my guest, Martin Palmer, the book, Kuan Yin Chronicles. Go to his website, arcworld.org, ARCWORLD.org. Martin, thank you again. This is Donna Sebo. We're taking a break. We're going to be back in just a moment.
Do you have a group, organization, or club that would like to have an interesting and dynamic speaker? Then you're going to want to have Donna speak to your group. She motivates audiences towards personal empowerment, giving them tools for their personal and professional success. If you would like Donna Sebo to bring a presentation to your next event, call Delphi International at 253-582-5604. That's 253-582-5604.
Are you concerned about nutrition? Do you work hard to eat right, try to feed yourself and your family nutritious food? Well, you'll want to know about glyconutrients. What are they? These are sugars that are present in nature. However, we're not getting them in our food anymore. Scientific study is proving that these sugars are necessary for all cellular and immune system function. Over 20,000 studies are conducted each year on glycoforms alone. These are the sugar protein structure that line each and every cell of the body. 4 out of the last 8 Nobel Prizes in physiology have been awarded for research in the area of cellular communication and how these sugars work in the body. This is Donna Sebo. Every day I bring to you information that will empower and light up your life. I would like to invite you to visit my website, DelphiInternational.com, and find out more about these glyconutrients. That's DelphiInternational.com. Go to my website, go to the left side of the screen, tap on the button that says glyconutrients. MIT's Technology Review, February 2003, states that glycomics is one of the 10 emerging technologies that will change the world. Education is the key to advancement of understanding and making our lives better. Visit my site, DelphiInternational.com. Go to the left side of the screen and tap on the button that says glyconutrients. I know it'll make a difference for you, as it has for me.
Do you want to lose weight? Do you deal with diabetes, high blood pressure, osteoporosis, or chronic pain? Do you want to know one of Dr. Perricone's 7 secrets to beauty, health, and longevity? Do you have 15 minutes a day to look and feel better? Then let me introduce you to DTaP, the workout that works. For the beginner or expert exerciser, learn from physical training specialist Teresa Tapp how, in just 15 minutes a day, you can burn fat and sugar, build strong bones and muscles, and lose inches fast, with no equipment or jumping. Visit the TTAP website, ttap.com, or call 1-800-342-0717 to learn how. That's T-TAPP.com. We'll help you lose inches, look good, and feel fabulous at TTAP. 1-800-342-0717, ttap.com.
Hi, this is Donna. Well, I know that what we did today was a little bit different. Normally I have the phone lines open, but when you have an opportunity to talk with someone who is making such strides along with other individuals to make a difference in the world, and I just had to let him share some of his wisdom and perception. And what he was saying is so important. It's important for us to know that we have to not just talk about what he said regarding the leaders of the Muslim faith making 3 years ago, just not even really being open to things, but after the pilgrimage of last year, 100 million plastic bottles left from the pilgrimage. 100 million. They counted them. That is what is happening all around the world. I just received information on plastic bottling. Now, in our world today, we now have a plastic that is biodegradable. It's made from corn, and there's some other food products, and it's totally, totally compostable. Microsoft has implemented at their company. Microsoft doesn't have anything in their cafeterias that is not what you'd call green. The reason is that we are becoming aware, and it takes that understanding. We're becoming aware that we have such a density of population. We have such a need to take care of so many things, and we must have containers that are going to keep things safe. So when you become aware of something of that magnitude, where before you didn't even see it, it makes you aware you've got to make a change, because how are you going to dispose of it? And that is where ingenuity comes in. And I know there's those of you out there that are in the listening audience that are geniuses, and you can come up with ideas and concepts about how we can do things. Well, people have come up with ways of creating plastic because plastic is very, very useful. But creating it out of substances where it will decompose, it will break down. You could put it in your composter, and it's going to just go right back into a natural element that's not going to pollute whatever it comes in contact with. We have, through a long process, had to educate ourselves. Oh, my goodness, we're out of time. I'm so sorry. Just had a fabulous hour. Thank you for being with me. Remember always, you're the master of your fate. You are the captain of your soul. Tomorrow is Yankee Stadium. Yes, a touch of history. We'll be talking with you right here, same time, same place, right here on BBS Radio. Talk with you manana. Bye for now.
You have been listening to The Donna Sebo Show. If you would like a copy of today's broadcast, send $10 to The Donna Sebo Show, P.O. Box 97272, Tacoma, Washington, 98497-0272. Be sure to put the date of the broadcast in your request. If you are not able to be a part of today's program, join Donna and her guests Monday through Friday, and she will be here to take your calls. Thank you for listening and being part of our program. Have a wonderful day.